Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies and protocols. I talk about the things that I've done that work, but also those big epic fails that I've made along the way. I share big ideas and practical strategies. I interview experts and share their insights, all because I really believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And as we think about this idea of helping students become more creative, reaching their creative potential, one of the core things that you'll notice is I talk about what does that mean in a world of machine learning? What does it mean in a distracted world? What does it mean in a world that is constantly changing? And so today we're gonna talk about that. What does it mean to take on this beta approach to teaching? What does it mean to take on this mindset of creativity and innovation at the educator level, at the teacher level? And to recognize that when we do that, it's not always going to be perfect. Before we get started, I just want to say, if you do not follow my newsletter or subscribe to my newsletter, you can find it at spencereducation.com. And if you have not followed me on Instagram, you can find me there. My handle is same thing. It's at spencereducation. So go check it out. I do these short little carousels and occasionally videos, and you might find something cool there that connects with what you want to learn. So without further ado, let's dive right into this week's topic. The idea of teaching with this beta approach. There's often a stereotype of veteran teachers as being out of touch and stuck in their ways. When I was a brand new teacher, this was the prototypical veteran teacher down the hall who would pull each overhead transparency out from a file folder. I know I'm losing some of you younger listeners. It was a thing that we used to do. And repeat the exact same lesson verbatim from year to year. As a pre-service teacher, I had professors who would warn us not to become the veteran jaded teacher who grows out of touch and falls behind the times. So that was the big warning. Don't become like that. But here's the thing. While I know that there are a few jaded veterans out there, I just don't find that to be the norm. I get the chance to be in a lot of school buildings as a professor working with pre-service teachers, also as someone who leads workshops and does keynotes. And I gotta tell you, when I talk to veteran teachers, I don't see jaded veterans. I often see wisdom. I see mastery. And yes, a bit of healthy skepticism. But that veteran teacher skepticism to the newest fads is born out of decades of experience watching new buzzwords and initiatives offering to fix education without ever asking, what are we already doing that's working? But there's also within these veteran teachers a desire to learn new strategies, to understand the emerging research, and to find new approaches in a quickly changing landscape. In other words, these veteran teachers are innovative, but they also know the difference between chasing fast fads versus experimenting with new and different approaches and actually testing those out. Case in point, yesterday I interviewed this woman named Lynn. And she's going to be on my podcast next week. I'm super excited about the episode. And in this upcoming episode, and seriously, listen to it next week, she shares her story of going from a therapist to a classroom teacher. And then she shares specific strategies. She talks openly about some of the new challenges of the current generation, how some of the students seem to lack resilience, they seem distracted. But it's not in this like curmudgeonly kids these days rant so much as an open admonition that things are changing. And then she kind of says, here are some things I'm trying to do to solve it. She shares how she integrated AI into her Genius Hour projects. And what I love about it is her vulnerability. She talks openly about what didn't work, but then she also talks openly about the elements that did work. And I love that. And so that interview afterwards had me thinking about this idea of teaching in beta. We are living in an era of rapid change, and we are seeing huge challenges. Obviously, you've probably felt it yourself. When I visit classrooms and work with teachers, I often notice that students seem distracted, anxious. They seem a little less resilient than they did maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I don't say this to be mean toward kids. These kids are phenomenal, but it's a reality. Meanwhile, teachers are facing massive changes with the role of generative AI, and there's this constant battle toward academic honesty. And then there's the current contentious social climate. You probably are feeling this too. Things politically and socially are really contentious. And it doesn't matter what country you're in, you're seeing it, right? I live in America, and obviously I see it a lot right now. And I don't say that to be political, by the way. I'm just saying it's the social climate that we're in. And there are no quick fix solutions that will work in every classroom every time. Instead, we need to embrace this mindset of teaching in beta. I'm going to get to what that means here in a second, but it begins with the recognition that it won't be perfect. In my first year of teaching, my mentor said something that I'll never forget. I taught a lesson that tanked. It was awful. I literally did everything wrong. It was the cringiest of cringe, and it was like the third day in a row of just hitting these epic fails. And so I shared every detail with him over coffee. And I expected some advice on how to fix the lesson. I thought maybe he would give me some affirmation. But that's not what happened. Instead, he said this: "John, learning is like a seed. It's a mystery. And some people are like water. They nourish. They build relationships. They help their students develop vital soft skills. Others are like light. They impart wisdom, they stretch your thinking, they push you intellectually. So it's like a greenhouse," I ask. "Yes, but let me finish," he said, "because there's a third type. These teachers are crap, total crap. I mean, the lessons stink. It's a hot mess. Nothing works." "Oh," I asked. "Yeah, but here's the thing. Kids need all three of those. They need relationships and soft skills and emotional intelligence. They need critical thinking and academic achievement and wisdom. But they also need to learn how to handle crap and grow resilient." I sat there silently thinking about my crappy lessons that I'd taught the three previous days. And then I said, "Which one am I?" And he said, "John, here's the hard truth. You'll always be all three of those teachers, no matter how long you've taught. Light, water, crap, you're always going to be all of the above." That's right. Sometimes we need the crap that becomes fertilizer for growth. Our gift, our humanity is a gift to our students. So as I think about this idea of teaching in beta, of being resilient, it begins with this notion of making mistakes. It's the notion that we will always have moments where, well, we're kind of crappy as teachers, and that's okay. I think there's something really powerful for students when they see an educator own their mistakes. My good friend Javi was one of the teachers that looked like a master teacher in like his first and second year of teaching. He was so open to new ideas, but quick to abandon a strategy that didn't work, and he would take different routes and he would pivot. He had a positive classroom climate and strong classroom management that felt like something someone develops over a decade, not a year. His students were highly engaged in meaningful projects, but he also knew how to provide clear, concrete, direct instruction. And I often wandered into his classroom during my prep period to observe and learn. Okay, to steal ideas. He had a slightly unusual classroom tradition. At the end of certain lessons, he asked his students to share their epic fails. This was a closing activity he used a few times a week, and that he later did when he taught self-contained all subjects. He would do it every day at the end of the day. And it was really designed to help students develop a growth mindset. His students were all English language learners, and this strategy really helped to reduce what's called the affective filter. So this was his strategy. He would say, today my epic fail was blank. I learned blank. Next time I will blank. I love that strategy. And then in pairs, the students would share their epic fails. The student listening would say, thank you for being brave. And then they would share their epic fail as well. And then he would call on a student randomly to share their epic fail to the entire class. Well, on one particular day, he pulled up the popsicle stick and it said, Javier. Javier, is there a Javier here? He shook his head and said, Javi, maybe? Is there a Javi? All the students are looking around like, there's no Javier here. And then they said, oh, wait, that's my name. He gave a wry smile and said, you can't call it. Call me that, though, all right? And then he explained his epic fail, the way he tried to teach vocabulary and what he learned from it. He talked about what he would try next time. He talked about asking for help and getting students to help come up with a new hand movement for his vocabulary. His students then stood up and gave him a standing ovation, which was the class ritual. As the students filed out of the classroom, I said, dude, Javi, I can't believe you got a group of seventh graders to cheer for your crappy vocabulary lesson. Maybe, he said. But I also got a group of 30 seventh graders who saw an adult male own his mistakes, tell them what he would do differently, and ask for help. That's something I just didn't experience as a kid. So teaching in beta means we reflect on our mistakes. We own our mistakes. So that's part one. Part two is we reflect on our failed projects. I think it's really important to recognize that when we do creative work, when we do lessons, when we do any of these things, there's this continuum where on the left hand we have ditch it, and then on the right hand we have keep it. And so we have failed experiments. I tried this experiment and it failed and I'm not going to do it again. Then we have redesign. I'm going to, you know, keep the core idea but completely overhaul my project with huge changes. Then we have revision. Keep the project, repeat it, but make some significant changes. And then we have refining it, right? I'm going to keep this project. I'm going to repeat it next year and do it again. And that's true of lessons. That's true of projects. That's true of any of those things that we do. So if we think about project-based learning, there's nothing wrong with repeating the same project from the year before. Going back to that supposed jaded veteran teacher who pulled out the transparency projector and retaught the same lesson. Well, what if that lesson was really good? What if it was a fantastic transparency? I get it, the technology is now obsolete, but back then that's what we used. And why not reteach something the same way next year that was absolutely awesome this year? So one of the things we want to think about is reflecting on what didn't work, but also reflecting on what did work. And I want to point out that it's very rarely an issue of good versus bad. I've seen lots of like social media posts that call things problematic or harmful or even traumatic. And I'm like, oh, well, what is that going to be? And you know what it is? Lectures, memorization, time to test, homework, deadlines. I got to say, none of those things really feel traumatic or harmful or problematic. They just don't. I understand the need to critique teaching practices, but I wonder if this good-bad binary actually gets in the way of meaningful dialogue and deeper thinking, and it fails to address the bigger injustices that actually exist in education. To be clear, there are some bad practices that we need to abandon. I get it. And there's nothing wrong with saying that. If you yell at a class, own it, right? Apologize on the spot. But the truth is, most strategies are neither inherently good or inherently bad. The reality is it's about context. It's about when we use these strategies. If we think about it, to borrow this metaphor from earlier of the seed, you know, how much light or shade does a plant need? What temperature is ideal? What should go into the soil? How much water is needed? Same thing is true in education. We like to treat it as a science, but that science has to be a science of experimentation. And when you hear this strategy is good, this strategy is bad, or even this one is research-based and that one is research-based, I think we miss out on the fact that everything is multivariate, which means there are so many variables at work. That's context. And because of the role of context, effectiveness is often when you use specific strategies, not if you ever should use that strategy. And again, there are bad strategies. I would argue, for example, popcorn reading is not an effective strategy, but peer reading is, right? So we know that there are some pros and cons. There's, you know, this works and doesn't work. But most of the things are truly about context. Consider the role of lecture. It gets a bad rap. And yet, when it comes to learning new ideas, we all love great speeches. Look, you're listening to a podcast right now. It's basically an audio lecture. I love listening to audiobooks. It's basically a lecture. And I often watch YouTube videos, which explain to me how to do something. That's basically, I don't know, a lecture. It's a how-to video. It's direct instruction. So the truth is we need lectures. We need direct instruction. It's just when do we use it and how do we do it effectively? Or you could say, you know, memorization isn't important if you can Google everything. And yet, I don't know, what about automaticity? What about having knowledge in your mind and be able to just pull from it when you need it? There's a time and a place to just memorize things or learn specific facts. I'm not generally a fan of homework, but it's not always harmful. Sometimes it's really effective. Sometimes it's a way to practice skills and get immediate feedback. Sometimes it's a way to extend what you're learning in class into your world or bring that world into your class. There's a time and a place for it. There are moments where you might just have to do homework because you didn't finish your work in class. And this is a natural consequence for a kid. Again, homework isn't inherently bad or good. It's about when and how we implement it. When we use terms like problematic or harmful to describe a teaching strategy, we rob ourselves of the chance to engage in an authentic dialogue. We create these false binaries that shut things down, and it prevents the nuance and the beauty that often exists in teaching. So to recap so far, number one, as we think about it, is things are changing. Number two is that we need to experiment, and it's okay if those experiments fail. We also need to have a continuum of what works and what doesn't work. And then we need to recognize that when something works, it's not necessarily all good or all bad. It's about when it worked. It's about context. And from there, we can take on this beta mindset. I believe in the philosophy of beta. No, not the old videotapes we had in the 80s, although they were epic. I'm thinking more along the lines of like beta releases in software platforms. It's the idea that you release your work in beta, knowing that it's not perfect and perhaps it might not even be good. You're gonna test it out. However, if you're going to send it to an audience and they can see it, experience it, play around with it, they'll give you the feedback that helps you improve. This feedback leads to self-reflection where you ultimately change your design and release a new version. And that leads to multiple versions and new iterations. And again, you're experimenting. So there's this cycle, a beta release, audience interaction, get feedback, redesign it, and then do another beta release or another release in general. Maybe you don't call it beta at that point. And it's an ongoing cycle. And the same philosophy works in teaching. When you take on a beta mindset, you're willing to take creative risks. You know that a lesson might work, but it might tank, and it's an experiment. You're not entirely sure. And then through tons of tiny iterations, your lessons grow and improve, and you become more innovative. In other words, innovation is less about inspiration and more about iteration. The beta mindset says, I'm not gonna wait till it's perfect. I'm gonna try this out even though I'm nervous and I'm not sure how it's gonna work. Because through experimentation, I will figure out what works. As I think about this idea of teaching in beta, there's a lot of advantages. Number one, you model creative risk taking for your class, for your students. You model humility as well, and you become humble and approachable. Students are empowered while also showing their teacher more respect because there's power in that vulnerability. Number three, the teaching remains fresh. The students don't fall into this zone of learning things that are always irrelevant. You don't fall into the trap of feeling like you have everything figured out, right? Number four, you're less likely to experience imposter syndrome because you know that you don't have to have it all figured out, that it's okay for things to be imperfect. Number five, you avoid the crushing perfectionism that leads to teacher burnout. My worst moments in teaching were tied to my perfectionism, and I am still recovering from that. I am still having to recognize that I will always be teaching in beta. And then number six, the lessons are ultimately more creative, more innovative, and you go through this slow iterative process. If you see a cool strategy and have a cool project idea and you're not sure how it's gonna turn out, go for it, test it out, experiment, release it in beta. It might not turn out perfect, but that's okay. Kids don't need perfect, they need real, they need you, and over time, it's going to become even better and more creative. If we think about it this way, I want you to imagine you have a flow chart and the question, am I sure it will work? If you drop down from that flow chart and you see yes, you get the status quo. If you see no, you get innovation. But then, if we think about the status quo, am I sure this will work? And I lean into the status quo, I get best practices. And I need those best practices. But if I'm not sure, I get next practices. And you know what? I need those next practices as well. So as we think about this notion of teaching in beta, it is this embrace of best practices overlapped with next practices. It's the overlap of tried and true with never tried. It's the recognition that some things are timeless, but we're also applying those things to new contexts, and we need to be adaptable as a result. The truth is, innovation will always be about growth, and that growth is messy and mysterious because ultimately this beta mindset is the recognition that it will always be about water and light and yes, even crap, and that's okay. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I hope the crap metaphor wasn't too offensive to you or too crass or whatever. But again, thank you so much for listening. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you subscribe to it on your app and maybe leave a review? Also, telling someone about it is one of the best ways to connect. So again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.